Hey guys, we are starting a new schedule for main episodes and mini episodes. This is my first like mini recap episode in a few weeks, but from now on they'll be every 2 weeks, and I will cover a little bit more than I did before. And that way I will actually have time to breathe in between recording current event pop culture recaps and main episodes, and that way I can kind of get into a rhythm. So here we are. This is the weekend of April the 13th on Saturday. Happy Saturday morning if you're listening to this when it drops. I'm recording this on Thursday. I have Friday night plans. And so I have a few things to talk about from the last few weeks. So let's get into it. So the main thing that I have been obsessed with recently has just been new music that my faves have been dropping. And I know that I've already talked about Hozier dropping Unheard EP that connects to his Unreal Unearthed album, which I didn't realize he re-released as like a disc one. And now Unreal Unearthed is like the disc two. But if you haven't listened to the song Too Sweet, go stream it. It's so good. It's his first like top 10 song since Take Me to Church, which is his first song ever. It's insane to me that he hasn't been more mainstream successful because he's so talented and his music is so beautiful. But go stream that song. It's great. And then go stream the rest of his entire discography. He's iconic. So that's exciting for me. But Chapel Roan just released a brand new single in the last week called Good Luck, Babe. And it is tearing up the internet. It is tearing across every feed I have. It may just be because I have a very specific algorithm, but it is so freaking iconic. It's so good. I love it. And I could sing the whole thing from top to bottom, and it's only been out like a week. I keep listening to it on repeat. She is so great. If you haven't listened to Chapel Roan, go listen to her album, The Rise and Fall of the Midwest Princess. She is just amazing. She's been opening for Olivia Rodrigo recently. I'm just so excited to see her getting traction and catching on kind of across the nation now and across the world. People love her, as they should. She's so amazing. But all that to say, the true music news that has come about since the last time I had a little recap episode is that Beyoncé dropped Cowboy Carter. It is absolutely iconic. There's very little I can say about it that hasn't already been dealt with and articulated beautifully by much more studied and wise people who are like connected to Beyoncé as an artist. So I'm not gonna try to say anything new about what she's done on this album. I just have to touch on it and just at least discuss the fact that it is truly a unique and special thing that she did with this album. She's not the first to change genres, but for some reason this feels revolutionary, and that it's not just a genre switch, but it's also like a genre education. I feel like she so meticulously put together the tracks on this album and made an experience, not just, hey, here are some bops that are really good and from the heart, but that it was an entire top to bottom, like a story was being told. There was an act one, you felt yourself being ushered through, and then you felt a shift into act two, and then you felt a shift into the final act, and then you felt the close, like you felt the opening song, you felt the middle like song, you felt the finale, you felt the ending. It truly was an experience to listen to this album. And like everyone who has been talking about this album says, you get into cycles with different songs at different times and you just start discovering something new with every listen. And it is a supremely special thing that she's been able to achieve with this album. Not just that now she's all, oh, she can also do this, she can also do that. Like, I think we can all agree Beyonce can kind of do whatever she wants. She can do it all. Whether you like her or not, if you don't like her, like, whatever. But whether you like her or not, no one can deny her talent and her ability. Like, she is such a strong vocalist. She's so musically savvy and she's just a brilliant musician. And she's an incredible artist and an incredible entertainer. And so the way that she was able to put this album together in such a way is just something that I don't think that we've gotten to experience in a long time. Someone quoted like clipped a little part of an interview from her at one point that I saw that said people don't make albums anymore. You know, they make like a collection of like pop, like hits, you know, maybe, but that they don't sit and, you know, try to make a story happen. And I think that directly relates to how she sat down and she was putting this together. It's hard for me to even say what my favorite songs are, but based on how I added them to my new music playlist, which I barely could even listen to because I try to listen to things on shuffle and just like get to know it. And that's why, I mean, I'm part of the problem. Like when Beyonce said, I don't think people make albums anymore, she was probably I'm sure she's referring to like streaming culture where like songs are pushed into your algorithm by Spotify and people are like, oh, I heard this one song that it showed me. And so people are making like collections of songs that would sound good if they ended up on shuffle. And, you know, she created a full story. It kind of needs to be listened to in order. So don't come for me that I kind of listened to these out of order at first. But I was at a Beyonce listening party when it dropped. And so I got to listen to it with some of my friends and we were all dancing and it was loud. And so I heard it for the first time over many people like cheering and singing along or trying to and like bumping speakers and dancing. So when I went back over it, I picked a few of my favorites from the night before that I remembered. And Two Most Wanted stuck out to me. I'm so excited for I love a good harmony. This is the one she sings with Miley. It's so beautiful. And their voices are weirdly complement each other so well. It's not two voices I would have ever expected to hear together, but it's definitely one of my favorites. I love Two Hands to Heaven was one of my favorites as well. And weirdly, I'm a 16 Carriages girly. She dropped that and yeah, Texas Hold'em. And everyone loved that one. And I like Texas Hold'em too. It's fun and it's the fun one to dance to. But 16 Carriages is the one when she dropped both of those during the Super Bowl. Like that was my favorite. It was so beautiful. And it holds up and I enjoyed it even more like listening to it in order that she put it on the album. So I loved that one. Tyrant. God, all of these. It's all so good, guys. You just need to go listen to the whole thing. I think my unpopular opinion is that I am obsessed with The Daughter. Not that it's an unpopular song. Everyone loves it because she sings operatically at the end. But my favorite part of the whole song is how cinematic that song is and that she says, I'm standing like over your body with your blood on my couture gown in a bathroom. It's just, and she tells this story where she's like, whoops, lost my cool and now you're dead. It is so like vivid in my mind what this like movie poster would look like. And I wish to God someone would make this into a movie poster. I like want to be daughter the song for Halloween. Like, it's just in my brain so vivid. And it feels like a movie. And she did say that these songs are based around cinema and Westerns and, like, movies in that, in the Western genre. And I can just see, like, it's a very, like, Kill Bill-esque, but, like, with the Western, like, twist kind of vibe. I just, Daughter is a, is an anomaly. For some reason, I'm kind of obsessed with it, despite it kind of being one that people are like, yeah, I like that one. Anyways, let's go over to these others. But I'm obsessed with that one. The discourse online has been very interesting. Like, obviously there's gonna be detractors always. And it's not shocking that there's also fandom wars, but it is kind of exhausting because it's like, you guys, there doesn't have to be fandom wars. So one tweet that I'll read is from Ira Madison III, who I adore, and he is one of the hosts of Keep It, one of my favorite podcasts. And he just, like, screenshotted a Swiftie just kind of being extremely annoying during Cowboy Carter's release. And she says something about how it's fascinating to hear the bubbles people live in. Everyone is talking about Cowboy Boy Carter, quote unquote, she says. But then she says, I only hear about it on that podcast. She's referring to Keep It. And it sold like half of what a re-release of Taylor Swift's album sells in an opening week. So they're just being really smug about numbers. And Ira retweeted it, I think he screenshotted it and posted it, and he said, do they ever take a rest? And I honestly saw that, and it made me really upset, because I was just like, I felt sad, because obviously I'm a Swiftie. I love Taylor Swift, and you guys know it. My first episode of this podcast was about Taylor Swift, and I will do others probably about her. And I've mentioned her on these many updates, but I do find it to be just insufferable to watch people like this online who are supposed to, like, claim to love an artist like Taylor Swift come for artists like Beyonce, especially when one of the major things that Taylor Swift discusses in her songs and just, like, in her interviews is that she's used to being pit against other women in the media, and she hates it, and she's not going to buy into that anymore. And so I don't understand why her fans cannot be smart enough to be like, yeah, same, I'm not going to pit you against other artists. Also, maybe this is going to get me fired as a Swiftie, but sorry, Beyonce is a more complete artist than Taylor Swift. I love Taylor. I think she's incredible. I'm excited for her new album, which is going to drop next week. She has never done anything like Cowboy Carter. She has never done anything like Lemonade. And I also feel like it's really important for people who are Caucasian to especially maybe shut up when it comes to people of color creating art that is also maybe for people of color. I think it's a really bad look for people who maybe don't listen to Beyonce or don't like her to begin with and are white people to then come in and act superior and condescending about all of the excitement that people are having when she drops an album. And I saw a lot of that. There was some discourse on TikTok about this one white female, I think she claims to be a musician, but someone said she doesn't have that many streams on Spotify, but she has music on Spotify. But this TikToker who just was extremely condescending on TikTok and was extremely the most insane criticism I've ever heard of Beyonce, which was that, like, she's lazy, like, these are boring, da 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 da. And I was just like, everyone kind of cocked their head to the side because they were just like, girl, what? Like, it's one thing to just be like, it's not for me, I'm not a fan of country music, I'm not a fan of Beyonce, so this is not for me. And just, like, leave it at that, move on. But to claim that Beyonce in any capacity has ever been lazy is just psychotic. She's a Virgo. What are we talking about? And if she's boring, then again, that is literally just you not having like the taste for her type of music. Like her music is not boring. It just might not be for you. And I feel like there's a really big disconnect, I think, between like critical discussion of art and people's like just personal opinions that they think is a valid opinion. And I have to be really honest and just say, sometimes your opinion isn't valid. Not everyone's opinions are valid. Like everyone likes to say like, oh, well, that's just my opinion. But you know what? Sometimes your opinion needs to not be spoken. It just doesn't need to be said. Sometimes your opinion is completely irrelevant. And I would say a time that a white girl on TikTok who never liked Beyonce in the first place, her opinion is not welcome during a time when Beyonce has dropped something as revolutionary as Cowboy Carter. And if you don't understand why it's so revolutionary, and it's very, very that, if you think that's an overstatement, you just need to look more into why it's so special. I can only mention so much about all the things that she put into it. But if you don't understand why it's so revolutionary, you should probably do some research or literally shut up. If you don't get why it's so revolutionary and people are saying that it is, you could maybe decide, oh, maybe they know better than I do about it as they have listened to the album and done a ton of research as it's their hyperfixation and therefore they know more than I do about it. And you can just literally step out of the conversation. And I feel like a lot of times people won't do the work that they need to do to actually have an informed opinion about things so that it can seem more valid, and B, literally shut up. Like people just won't, like they need to be able to speak on things even when they will admit with their whole chest that they don't actually know what they're talking about, which I saw a lot when it came to the Beyonce album. I think too, the greatness of Beyonce just bothers people sometimes because I just don't get it. Like, okay, cool. Then go over there, dude. Like no one asked, you're fine. You do not have to be a part of this one. But I also find it, a lot of these arguments to be disingenuous, and I have kind of had conversations with my friends about this because we all are consuming Cowboy Carter and we're all kind of in awe of what she did and the kind of like layered, nuanced, like historical lessons, like social lessons, just musical history lessons, as well as the genre of country that we're learning from on all these things. Like there are artists that she samples on here that have roots in the country genre, that have roots in Black country. And I'm learning so much and I'm so grateful to her that she does this kind of thing with her albums. And then there's people with the audacity to be like, I don't like Blackbird. I think she was just being lazy by covering a Beatles song. And it comes from a place of ignorance, but like the kind of ignorance that's accompanied by a disgusting level of superiority. And you can tell when a person speaks in that capacity that they are excited to get to shit on someone like Beyonce and her fans. And I find it really insincere when people say, oh my God, you guys just can't take criticism. You guys can't handle Beyonce being criticized. Like, can I just not like something? And it's like, yeah, you can just not like something. But if you're going to talk about something and talk about not liking it and make a whole TikTok about it or with your whole chest put something out on the internet and say, I don't like it and I get to not like it, then you better be ready for people to come at you with, okay, let's examine that opinion and why. And if your opinion is rooted in what you may not understand to be white supremacy, then you're gonna have to stand on some business about it. You're either gonna have to backpedal and start like admitting that you need to do some inner work, or you're gonna have to double down and look like an even bigger asshole. And that's the thing, is it's like, oh, can I disagree without it being a race thing? And I put a TikTok up. I actually stitched a TikTok because I felt so deeply about what someone said. They articulated it better than I did. But you cannot divorce your criticism in a world where we live right now, especially in America, that is a white nationalist patriarchy. like it's very close to being that, but like at worst it's that, and at best it is a racist country where racism is like part of our system, is systemic. You cannot divorce your opinion from race or gender or any, you can't be apolitical about anything when all of the things that we have learned about all the things that we have learned about that have formed our opinions have come from that system that has taught us white supremacy and patriarchy. And so the answer, unfortunately, is no. You don't get to say that because it's more complicated than, well, I just don't like it. Okay, well, then you cannot like it. No one's saying you don't have to, that you have to like it. But don't talk about it on main. You know, don't put it out there on the internet for people to respond to if you can't stand behind it. And I think that's what a lot of people don't really understand, is like, oh, y'all just can't handle criticism. It's like, no, we can. We're taking your criticism and we're going to dig into that a little bit. Where's that actually coming from? And it is you who cannot stand on what you say. You know, it's like you cannot handle criticism or being demand for you to look inward and be like, why do I think this? What made me want to post on main, having no idea about the background of this album or any of the history behind it, or why she chose that Beatles song, which was written for black women in the 60s during the civil rights movement, that she added voices of black country artists to. Why would that be amazing and not boring? Why would that be interesting and not lazy? You know? Oh, you didn't know those things? Well, then I guess you shouldn't have said a damn word, maybe. You know? It's that kind of thing. So, not to get on a soapbox, I'm already like 20 minutes in and I'm so sorry, but like that's kind of where I fall with all of the Cowboy Carter stuff, is it's doing something very special, and it is very, very meticulously put together, and you can like it or not, but I hope if you are forming opinions on things when it comes to these things, that are, there's a lot of nuance there. There's a lot that goes on. It's not as black and white. It's not simple. There's a lot of complexities that go into consuming the art of others. And especially in this case, considering that Beyonce was inspired by her treatment at the Country Music Awards when she performed with the Chicks. You have to come correct. And if you're not ready to do that, then you be quiet. Just be quiet. Literally go away. If you're not willing to do the work to enter into a conversation with humility, firstly, as a white person, if you're going to comment on this album, and then secondly, with like an understanding that there's more to it that you need to probably like understand and look into than what you just, you know, hear off the top, you know, then just don't do it. I didn't feel comfortable talking too much about it in like digging into it and analyzing it myself, because I don't know. I just don't feel like I am as connected with Beyonce's entire body of work to really get to dig into that. I'm not the person to listen to about that, but I would highly encourage anyone interested in the album, if you haven't started listening to it yet, to dig in and get on Genius, because I love reading what people write about the lyrics and the way they dig into that kind of stuff. And people on Twitter, like Cowboy Carter, I learned, I would say, like a full less like history lesson just from reading my Twitter feed one day. Like there's some brilliant people on the internet. So but I absolutely love the album. I at first, you know, Lemonade's my favorite of her albums. I love it. And it's the one I love as a whole, as I'm a casual Beyonce fan. And so I love many of her other songs, and I enjoy a lot of her other albums, but I've never sat down and said, I need to listen to 4, or I need to listen to her self-titled right now. You know, I've never done that. I've done that with Lemonade. Liked Renaissance. It was fun and I enjoyed it. But again, it wasn't for me. And it just didn't impact me personally. But it was, I really liked it. But when I sat with Cowboy Carter, I was like, damn, this is so, so special. Like, I really feel like we're witnessing something special. So I really hope that this is going to be her album of the year. It would be absolutely insane if she didn't get it for this, because I just feel like the craftsmanship and everything with this album is amazing. Okay, so let's move away from that. I'm going to talk briefly about the eclipse, because the eclipse happened. And I live in Dallas, and so I was so lucky I got to, actually, I didn't have to go anywhere. I was just here, and I happened to be off work that day because of, like, a scheduling mishap, and so we just happened to be off that day. It had nothing to do with the eclipse, but it was just perfect timing. So I was at an eclipse party with my buddies, and that weekend, there was 400,000 people who came in to Dallas to watch the eclipse, and the forecast was like cloudy, overcast. Like, we were like, oh my god, everyone's gonna be so upset if we don't get to actually see this thing. And I was so terrified that traffic was gonna be terrible on Monday, but it was actually terrible Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And Monday honestly was fine. And so I guess everybody just came into town on a Friday for that weekend, and this started messing up Dallas for whatever reason, seeing what they could see while they were here, I guess making a trip of it. And then on Monday they got where they were going to watch it, and they just stayed there, which I was grateful for. So I was at an eclipse party with some of my buddies, and it was so special. Like, I saw some people trying to be really like too cool for school about it online. And this tweet by a woman called Julia Reinstein was so funny. I had to screenshot it. She said, "Cannot imagine bigger loser energy than proudly not being psyched about the eclipse. It's one of the coolest days there is to live on Earth. Grow up and get a sense of wonder and whimsy." And like, that is exactly how I feel about it. You're not too cool for space. Like, what's wrong with you? Why are you even alive if you can't get excited about planets? Like, what is the point of being on this Earth if you cannot get excited about amazing natural occurrences? Like, I literally don't know what the point of life is if you can't get excited about that. So I just thought it was so darling that so many people flew to the path of totality across the nation. I get really down sometimes and worry about the future of the planet, because I gestures broadly, like, there's a lot of horrific stuff going on. So like, it's so special when something like this happens and I get to remember, well, people are also adorable. Like, this is so sweet. So I met two girls at the eclipse party who worked virtually with one another at a company. And one was from New York City and one was from Portland. And they only knew each other via Zoom. And they flew in to hang out in Dallas for the eclipse and like have a buddy weekend. And I was like, this is so cute and special. So it was just so darling. It was so, I just had such a fun time. NBC said that the eclipse cost America $700 million in lost productivity. And someone else was like, everyone who was mad about the eclipse taking off work schools to see a miracle of the natural world needs to understand that politics and business exist to support civil society and not the other way around. And I think that was such a good reminder. I love stuff like the eclipse where we all stop and we're like, oh, okay, this is actually why we are alive. I absolutely, this woman said, her name is Sylvia. Oh, and the other tweet was by a guy named Sherman McCoy, who was saying, this is what we're supposed to be doing with society. I agree with him. So this woman named Sylvia said, I absolutely love watching everyone watch the eclipse together and share glasses and say, whoa, cool, with strangers and just pause for a minute to be on the planet together. Again, it is truly, it's truly why we are alive. I honestly can't think of another reason for us to be alive. That's what we're here to do. All right, three more things, and they're pretty quick. I have to mention the JoJo Siwa, like, kind of scandal right now. She's entering into a new era. If you don't know who JoJo Siwa is, she had a show for kids. She's the blonde girl with the really high up ponytail. And she's grown now, and she recently came out as a lesbian. And she released this new music video, and everyone is having a moment about this new era. So she's trying to be like this bad girl. But her stylist, I don't know who her people are, but she needs to fire all of them, because her new like bad girl image is very like early 2000s, like it's almost like a parody that you might see of a bad girl phase of a child star in like a comedy. It's just not, it ain't right, y'all. It's not right. It's very cringe. And this, oh my god, this is one of my favorite tweets that went viral by a guy called Topher. And it's a picture of JoJo with her very cringe, like, bat girl. Like, I don't know. I'm going to call it a costume. It's not even an outfit. It's just like her dressed up as a creature. And it says, JoJo Siwa reveals that she isn't that innocent after all. And then her quote is, just wait until I drop that F-bomb, she warns, which nobody is very scared of those, okay? Like, we're not scared of the F-bomb. Like, if anything, like, that's just, like, regular vernacular at this point. So that's kind of cringe. So then Topher goes, she's like when you give a homeschool kid Mountain Dew. And I lost it because I went to college with a lot of homeschool people because I went to a Christian university. And that is exactly the vibe she's given. It's, like, the first time she's ever discovered it, like, sugar. I don't know. She's acting crazy. She's like, I'm bad girl now. I'm a lesbian. This is what we do now. We wear dark makeup and weird clothes. So the thing that I got from this the most, because she has this new song called Karma. She claimed to have written it, but we know that isn't true because it's a 10-year-old song that someone else already, like, recorded a music video for. And in fact, JoJo just, like, purchased the rights to it. And so then she's getting all this hate because people are saying she lied. I think she's mismanaged and misinformed. Honestly, I think she just doesn't know what to do to kind of put herself out there. She also made this comment that she wants to create this thing called gay pop, and that has made lots of people kind of raise their eyebrows too, because like Tegan and Sarah did a post about it where they were like making a kind of a silly face because they were like, didn't we do that already? And there's so many other people who are like raising hand, hello I'm here, you know. And so people are giving her a hard time about saying that, as if no one's ever made gay music before. And I really just think I don't think that she's trying to erase anything. I think she's just ignorant of the history. And I think that she's in the public eye and she's excited to start a new era of whatever. And she's just being badly managed. Like, I don't know. I think there's an epidemic, and I'm not trying to sound like a boomer, but I do think there's an epidemic of younger people not understanding their history, period. And when I say that, I don't mean to, like, criticize Gen Z for not having a sense of, like, curiosity and, like, wanting to better understand things at a deeper level. I think that they, a lot of times, it doesn't occur to them that they should or could know something at a deeper level. And I do think that comes with And I thought about this a lot because I knew I was going to talk about this on the podcast today. But I do think that there has been a pocket of parenting. There's a pocket of time where parenting did not raise kids to have a desire to better understand those things. Like, I think that we, and this goes along with what I believe, you know, is just technology evolving faster than we can keep up. I think there's a patch of our kids who grew up with the answers always at their fingertips and questions always being answered kind of like easily with Google and everything, and algorithms building things in front of them to form their own taste, so that they weren't challenged to create their own taste, and so that they weren't challenged to have to problem solve. In a lot of ways, they weren't challenged to have to think, you know, about how certain things come together, because they were not challenged in those ways because of technology creating a sense of convenience. And so I hope this makes sense, but, and that it doesn't sound judgmental, but I do think that there is a lack of media literacy, which at least that I'm seeing online constantly, that is a different form of media literacy, like that, than what we had before. And I do think it has to do with they were not challenged to problem solve, and so it doesn't occur to them in this way. And I see that in my classroom a lot too. Like, my kiddos now that I teach, they're not problem solvers. It's hard for them to critically think. And I do think it has a lot to do with how easy it is to just, like, the internet to answer their questions for them. So then they don't know how to kind of form the correct questions for themselves. All that to say, I don't know how I got there, but with JoJo Siwa, I kind of see that kind of same thing where it's like, this is an ignorance. This is, I do not believe she's doing this in malice. I don't believe she's manipulative. I don't believe she's a bad person. I do think that she was just uninformed, uninformed, and didn't have the capacity to know that she needed to be informed, and didn't have the right kind of team around her to inform her. Next thing, I'm not going to end on O.J. Simpson dying, so I'll talk about that next. So O.J. Simpson literally died today. I cannot explain to you guys why it really stunned me, and I don't know why. I think it's because I felt like bad guys never die. You know what I mean? Like, where I was just like, sure, OJ Simpson's gonna live forever because he's a horrible person. So I guess also it was shocking because I didn't even realize he was sick. I think he even on his last video, I read today that he had said, I'm fine, like, there's nothing wrong with me, and then he dropped dead like today. He lied. Shocking. When I found out, my jaw was just dropped for a full minute and a half. And I don't know why. I think too, the OJ trial was such a huge part of like my earlier memories, because I was like, I think I was in fourth grade when the OJ trial was happening. And my dad, obviously, he was a football coach like half my life. And so he obviously was interested in OJ Simpson as a football player, as an actor. I loved the Naked Gun series when I was growing up. And so I watched that trial and just like, we were all just glued. It was a incredibly impactful social moment, like cultural moment for everybody at that time. And then stuff just kept happening. Like, like OJ was always just a weird oppressive presence, it felt like a little bit. When I read that he had died, I was like, something lifted. It was weird. I was like, wow, he's like not here anymore. That is such a weird thing to believe in, that this world does not contain that man anymore. So that was a wild moment, and I had a very strange reaction I was not expecting to have. But I mean, obviously, good riddance. He is a murderer. And then he was acquitted, and then he tried to write that book, If I Did It, where he talked about how he probably actually did it and could have done that, could have actually written it if we didn't have the rules, the laws against actually getting to benefit from your crime financially. If I understand it correctly, I do think Ronald Goldman's family did maybe publish it and got all of the money from it. That's why OJ was so, like, broke at some point that he went to steal all of his, like, stuff back and then went to jail for robbery. But it was a very surreal moment for me today, and I was very surprised. All that to say, if you have never watched OJ Made in America, it's the ESPN docuseries about not just OJ and the trial, but the events that happened throughout his entire career and throughout the racial history of America that led to his trial and the verdict from his trial. You've got to watch it. I will say it's one of the greatest docuseries I've ever seen, and it is worth every penny. If you have to rent it, do it. It's very, very important. And I think this is another thing that is good to know all the nuances and complexities about, because I think people do want to simplify kind of everything. And I understand that it's a lot easier to live a life if things are more simple and cut and dry. But I think it makes you a better person, in my opinion, if you try to see the nuances in things, if you can stomach it, if you can. So, and I think it's pretty cut and dry when someone murders their ex-wife in this horrific way. And so it's really easy for people to be like, that was messed up, that he was acquitted. But I think, too, when you watch the docuseries and you kind of understand where everyone was coming from at the time, you start understanding a bigger picture of where America was at the time, especially if you're a white person, and especially if you're a child, especially if you weren't even alive at the time. I was a kid, you know. I didn't understand anything about any of that stuff as a child. And I, you know, a lot of times you look back and you're like, damn, that happened, when you're an adult. But then you watch a documentary like this and you're like, wow, I would have never known any of these things if I hadn't watched. So it's really worth a watch. Also, American Crime Story season one, which is OJ versus the People versus OJ. Incredible. Incredible. Also a very important piece of media connected to it. I think I was obsessed with that series when it came out. And I read up on every little thing that Ryan Murphy did with it, because I wanted to see how accurate it was. And there's an episode about the jury that I think is extremely important to see in order to understand how that verdict came down also. So if you're interested in any media to help kind of remind yourself of this man's horrific legacy and like what was really kind of going on and the surrounding stuff going on with that, those are two pieces of media that I highly encourage everyone to watch. I want to leave this segment by suggesting two articles that I think are important to read to remember the victims of his crime. One is on Evergreen. It's called In Memory of Nicole Brown Simpson. It is by Andrea Dworkin. And then there's a Rolling Stone article that is called Fred Goldman on O.J. Simpson's Death. The only thing that is important today are the victims. I'm going to read an excerpt from Andrea Dworkin's article about Nicole Brown, because it isn't just about the crime itself, but what led to it, and the fact that at the end of the day, the O.J. Simpson story is a story of domestic violence and a story of how America views domestic violence victims. She says, "Where is the victim's voice? Where are her words? I'm scared," Nicole Brown told her mother a few months before she was killed. "I go to the gas station, he's there. I go to the Payless shoe store, and he's there. I'm driving, and he's behind me." 5 days before Nicole Brown Simpson was murdered on June 12, 1994, she called a battered woman's shelter in terror that her ex-husband was going to kill her. The jury was not told this because she couldn't be cross-examined. It was Nicole who asked the police to arrest Simpson in 1989, the ninth time the police had been called. Arrest needs to be mandatory. What dignity is there, after all, in confessing, as Nicole did in her diary, that OJ started beating her on a street in New York and their hotel room, continued to beat me for hours as I kept crawling for the door. He kept hitting her while sexually using her, which is rape, because no meaningful consent is possible or plausible in the context of this violence. Those of us who are not jurors have a moral obligation to listen to Nicole Simpson's words. To how O.J. Simpson locked her in a wine closet after beating her and watched TV while she begged him to let her out. To how, in a different hotel room, O.J. threw me against the walls and on the floor, put bruises on my arms and back. The window scared me. Thought he'd throw me out. We need to hear out how he threw a fit, chased me, grabbed me, threw me into walls, threw all my clothes out the window into the street, three floors below, bruised me. We need to hear how he stalked her after their divorce. Everywhere I go, she told a friend. He shows up. I really think he's going to kill me. Words matter. O.J. Simpson's defense team asked Judge Lance A. Ito to order the prosecution to say domestic discord rather than domestic violence or even spousal abuse, already euphemisms for wife beating, and to disallow the words battered wife and stalker. I will link both of these articles in the show notes. The final thing I'm going to talk about is the Joker 2 trailer. I'm just going to briefly talk about this. I never saw the first Joker because it, like, there were just too many incels online who said, this is my Black Panther. Like, literally, people said that. Terrifying men on the internet said that. And I was like, not interested. Could not be more, like, uninterested in something in my life. Not to mention, I'm a huge Batman fan, and I am very particular about the Batman media that I consume. And I was like, I will not be allowing that Joker to enter into my headcanon. No, thank you. And so to this day, I still haven't seen it. I know everybody says it's great. I know Joaquin Phoenix was nominated, blah, 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 whatever. I don't care. I'm not interested in Joker 2, but the trailer dropped, and I do know that it's a musical, and I am a Lady Gaga fan. So I'm very conflicted. But the one, and I will say this too. There's a scene in the trailer where Harley takes her lipstick and she draws on the window that's between her and the Joker. And she draws like a red smile, like smiley face or whatever. And then he leans over behind it and smiles and it fits perfectly behind the lipstick. And people are losing their minds online. They're like, oh my gosh, cinema is so bad. We are in the hands of professionals. And I was like, y'all, that is like the most obvious thing to do. Like, it's not, that is, I mean, it's fine. Like, I'm not trying to be a dick about it, but like, come on. Like, that isn't that special. I don't get it. But whatever. So I was on Twitter, like I am usually. And today I saw a tweet that said, Joker 2 director Todd Phillips confirms that the Joker is bisexual. And the quote is, he's bisexual and stuff. And my ears kind of perked up, my eyebrows raised a little, and I was like, oh, is he now? And this man called Jesse Hawkins retweeted it and said, I do like the long game being played here. Give the incels 4 years to reconstruct their entire personality around this version of the Joker and then say, and he's bisexual. Snaps. Snaps to Todd Phillips. If I don't believe that's what Todd Phillips is doing, but if there's a chance that Todd Phillips is like, and screw incels in particular with this movie, then I'm on board and I will support it. I know it's going to be a jukebox musical, which just means to me, like, great, they're going to gleeify this story I already didn't really want to see. But if Todd Phillips keeps talking like this about his main character possibly pissing off incels, like, I gotta say, like, I'm not against that. I love that. I love that for them. Hope they're mad. Love that for me. It makes me happy. That is all I've got for y'all for now. I'm sorry it's been a little while, but now it'll be a little bit more of a routine. So I'll see you guys in 2 weeks for another mini, which even though this one's like nearly 50 minutes long, it still counts as a mini. And I'll see you guys on Tuesday for another main episode. I hope you guys have a great week. Bye.